Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Getting a lot of tweets and texts about gym etiquette now. People saying that the only reason you should be talking to anyone else in the gym is if somebody misplaced something or lost something. I had a dude walk up to me in the gym. He's huge. Huge dude. He was all swollen like he had been stung by a bunch of bees. He said, I was on the machine. I was about to do my set, and he said, are you on this machine? And I said, yes, I am. I am on this machine right now. I'm about to do a set. And then he walked away. That was it. What did he want? Did he want me off the machine?
Usually when people say that, they're basically asking, how much longer do you have?
Well, I should have pulled my phone out and watched a movie or something. Got on Netflix.
That's the most annoying thing, though, really. There was this guy once that was taking up the squat rack. He took his shoes off. He would walk over to the water fountain, fill up his water bottle, come back, start a conversation, put his shoes back on, do some squats, take his shoes back off. He was real comfortable.
He should have taken his shoes when he walked over to get a drink of water. Put him at another machine.
Yeah.
Moved all of his stuff.
Tie them together.
Yeah. It's not a campsite. It's a squat rack. What is proper gym etiquette? John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. What is gym etiquette? You're a sports guy. You go into the gym. Everybody want to talk about the Pac-12 with you?
I avoid the gym at all costs. that would actually may get me in shape. I don't want to be in shape.
Wilner, you had a great piece on the Pac-12 officiating crew. They will be the crew of assignment tonight on the national championship game. So it's Clemson on one team and LSU on another, and the Pac-12 has finally got a presence in this title game. But you found something out about the crew. Who's on the crew, and what does it mean?
So the crew, the Pac-12 has the game because they were the only Power 5 conference that was, you know, would not have a team, was guaranteed to not have a team in the championship. Once that's set, then the conference itself picks the officials for each of the, you know, for the assignments. They decided on Chris Coity for the role of referee. And he, some fans may remember, he was involved in a controversy 2 years ago in the Music City Bowl where he kicked Kentucky's best player out of the game for contact with the official. It was very controversial. In fact, he ended up getting some threatening phone calls and emails for it. And then the conference also picked two judges who were part of the Washington State Cal officiating crew this season.
Brother.
Washington State was lost 57 yards in field position to start a drive because the referee screwed up a penalty and nobody caught it. Two members of that crew, and that crew was downgraded, and yet two members of that crew are going to be working the championship game tonight.
Why would they do that? Why would the Pac-12 stick officials that have had problems? Is this the best they got?
Well, my guess is that if you ask David Coleman, I assume is the one who made the assignments, he's head of Pac-12 officiating. My guess is he'd tell you that these guys are his best at that those particular roles that they're assigned tonight, and that they were downgraded for the Cal-Washington State game because they kind of had to do something, even though it wasn't specifically their fault.
Crazy. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. The guy that you're talking about being on the, referee having the issue, didn't he initiate the contact in that interaction?
He did. Benny Snell was getting up. Kentucky tailback Benny Snell had been tackled hard, hit the turf, was about to get up, and the referee reached, basically kind of reached out to help pull him up, and Snell pushed back against his arms and then was flagged for it. He's saying, no, I don't want your help. And then he gets ejected because he made contact with the official. But the referee initiated the contact, then booted the kid out of the game. I thought it was just grossly unfair. In fact, Kentucky Athletic Director Mitch Barnhart, if I recall correctly, he like demanded an apology from the Pac-12. I mean, it was a pretty big controversy, the biggest controversy of the bowl season from an officiating standpoint 2 years ago. And that guy is in charge tonight.
This is not a wager that you can make. I looked for it. The Pac-12 screwing up something in the officiating that affects the game tonight is not on the board, but it's going to happen, Wilner. They're going to make a mistake. They're going to look indecisive. And the fact that I think all of this is floating out there, and I think the whole country knows these are Pac-12 officials, yikes, what's going to happen? I think that it plays a role in tonight's game. What's best case and worst case scenario for Larry Scott's conference tonight?
Well, best case is that, you know, there is what would be considered a reasonable amount of, you know, close calls. Nothing egregious, right? I mean, you're not going to get a perfectly called game. As long as there's nothing egregious, I think the conference is okay. The problem is if there is something egregious. For instance, Clemson-Ohio State semifinal had two huge calls, the targeting and then the defensive touchdown that was called back. Those, if the Pac-12 is involved tonight in controversies that reach the level of those two and that happened in the semifinals to the SEC officiating crew, then I think it's a terrible situation for the conference.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group, terrific follow on Twitter. By the way, we also, you know, we look at the Pac-12 and how far away they are from this game. Do you have confidence that one of these teams can overcome the conference itself, the lack of exposure, the lack of revenue generated, and that there'll be an outlier that can crack through if it is a four-team playoff? Or are we all sitting around waiting for eight so the Pac-12 can be part of it?
Oh, boy. I mean, I think that probably you're waiting around for eight. It kind of depends on USC, I think, to a certain extent, you know, in the next 4 or 5 years, can they get their act together? If they can, they are certainly capable of putting together a roster that can make the playoff. Other schools, the margin for error is a little bit more narrow. And, you know, let's look at Oregon, right? They're going to have a terrific defense next year. If they get good play on offense, they're going to be in contention for the conference title. But who they're playing on, you know, September 12th, right? That's the thing. The conference has got, I think the scheduling issue is a big deal. You schedule nine conference games, and you have Ohio State, and you have to win your conference championship. And to this point, the committee has not let anybody in with two losses, which I think is a problem. But if we're looking at it, the immediate future through the lens of, you got to have 0-1 losses, it's going to be awfully hard for the Pac-12.
John Wilner with us. There are a lot of new coaches in the conference. Mike Leach and Chris Peterson gone in the same breath, really. I noticed that you put something out sort of comparing what is the bigger loss to the conference. You think it's Leach over Peterson. Why?
I do, because I think the potential for Washington State to, you know, revert back to pre-Leach or early Leach form is, I don't know if it's high, but it's certainly higher than Washington falling way back, right? I mean, the Huskies are in good shape and have a lot of margin for error, recruiting base, resources. They should always be a good or very good program. But Washington State doesn't have a lot of margin for error. And what Leach did there, I think, is phenomenal. And the conference doesn't need, a cream puff. They don't need Washington State slipping back to 1-11, for instance. And so I think that Leach's ability to prop up a program that is on the low end in the resource department has been a huge thing for the Pac-12's depth. And without him, there's a decent chance that depth is going to erode.
I also like that he was willing to challenge Woody Dixon, challenge Larry Scott, challenge David Coleman. And I know that when he left Washington State, there were a lot of people around the conference that sort of went, oh, man, this conference will be less interesting, or Washington State might take a step back, as you said. I kind of feel like the atmosphere inside conference headquarters might have been, he's gone. Let's get somebody who's less of a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a thorn in their side. There's no doubt. And, that, you know, that's kind of his personality in a lot of ways, right? He can be controversial in some of his public statements, whether they're political or otherwise. He's often, almost always entertaining, whether he intends to be or not. And I think that a lot, on the whole, that was good for the conference. It brought attention to Washington State. It brought attention to the conference. And he certainly was not afraid to challenge authority. Sometimes he did it publicly, and sometimes he did it privately. But I think that they're going to miss him on and off the field.
John Wilner is with us, the Wilner Hotline. You can find him on Twitter. Also, you make sure that you're reading him at the Bay Area News Group and the San Jose Mercury News. Before I cut you loose, you know, you've got college basketball season that I think is going to be very interesting on the women's side. You got a bunch of really good teams, maybe a couple of Final Four teams on the women's side. On the men's side, Oregon, you know, emerging, and of course Arizona, until their loss to Oregon State yesterday, was sort of looking like a contender as well. How much fun will March be? Where should our eyeballs be this March?
Well, I mean, they got to be, I think, on both sides, right? The women's, you know, they're going to have at least five, maybe six or seven NCAA tournament teams, and a bunch of them will be high seeds, right? 1, 2, 3 seeds. Whereas the men, I think it is a better overall product. There are more decent teams, and I think they're going to have more teams in the NCAAs this year. But the question for the men is, you know, how many 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds are there? Oregon is, and I'm not sure anybody else is. And if once you start slipping into that lower rung, it's much harder to get your way all the way through to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. So I think that it'll be interesting on both sides, but certainly the women are stacked up better to advance more teams deep in the tournament.
I'm going to take Clemson tonight in the national championship game. Who do you like?
You know, I got Clemson. I think it's going to be a terrific game. But gosh, you just think fourth quarter, who's going to make a play? Who's going to make a stop on third down? Who's going to complete that third and eight pass? Clemson's got so much experience, right? And they just know how to win. And I think that it'll end up being, you know, very close, terrific entertainment, and Clemson in a, you know, tight game.
Better pro quarterback, Trevor Lawrence or Joe Burrow?
Boy, probably Lawrence, right? I mean, he's certainly bigger. He's huge. He's like 6'6", 240. He can run, as we saw against Ohio State. He's got the arm. I mean, he's got all the tools, you know. And Burrow, as good as he is not elite, you know, from a physical attribute standpoint. So I would add, and Lawrence is so poised and such a great, you know, so great under pressure. I would probably pick Lawrence, but it's fun. We're probably going to watch the next two number one overall picks, right? I mean, Burrow this year and then Lawrence next year. So that's doesn't happen very often.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. I appreciate you, man.
Thanks very much.
There he is. He's the best on the Pac-12. A lot going on with the Pac-12. So when you watch the game tonight, you got Clemson, that's one team. You got LSU, that's another team. And then you have the Pac-12 officiating crew. That's team number three. Our big splash is coming up next. I want you to leave it here. Well, I received Major League Baseball's 9-page memo that they sent out just about an hour ago. Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball commissioner, with some harsh punishment for the Astros. There's new developments on that front, and it is part of our big splash.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where?
Down there.
But we... The Big Splash! Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Well, the Houston Astros have been found to be complicit of stealing signs and using technology from their video review team to steal signs that helped them win a World Series. The Astros, A.J. Hinch, and their general manager as well, were both suspended for 1 year by Major League Baseball. Astros owner Jim Crane later announced that he has fired both A.J. Hinch and his general manager for being complicit as part of this scheme. What happened? Well, the Astros used video technology from their review team to steal the signs from the catcher. They ultimately decided that the best way to convey whether it was going to be a fastball or a breaking ball to the batter was to take a baseball bat and bang it against a plastic trash can in the dugout. Jeff Luhnow, the general manager of the Astros, not just suspended for 1 year, now fired by the Astros. Also, A.J. Hinch, the manager, not just suspended, but also fired. The Astros owner and chairman Jim Crane said he was unaware of any of the violations of Major League Baseball rules. And in fact, he told his general manager after the Red Sox discipline was announced that the Astros should not be engaging in any kind of conduct like this. The Astros, with a more definitive and harsher punishment than Major League Baseball. It leaves me wondering about the Dodgers. Did the Astros beat the Dodgers because they stole signs, not because they were the better team? I mean, it violates the very integrity of the game. A lot of jokes being made about the Patriots and Deflategate and Belichick and draft picks, but ultimately, this was bad conduct by a Major League Baseball team that should have known better. Should have known better. A.J. Hinch will still be suspended from Major League Baseball, cannot be present in any Major League Baseball, minor league baseball, or spring training facility, including stadiums. He may not travel with clubs. And by the way, if he's found to engage in any future material violations of Major League rules, he will be permanently ineligible, Pete Rose style. Also, Brandon Taubman, ineligible to perform on behalf of any Major League team. If he's found to engage in any rules as well, he is done. Also, Jeff Luhnow, who is the general manager, was the general manager of the Astros, suspended and now fired. All of them gone, done. Major League Baseball trying to leave this in the rearview mirror. I applaud Rob Manfred for having a transparent process, but I'm also a little surprised in today's era with technology that this isn't more rampant. And I'm also curious why nobody on any opposing team picked up on this immediately. Like, guys hanging around in the dugout didn't hear trash can banging, breaking ball, nothing, fastball, didn't pick up on that. 162 games, playoffs, World Series. It took until the end when somebody finally revealed, like, hey, these guys, and by the way, did the Astros really think they were going to get away with it? By the time your roster disperses a year later, they're off in other places. Guys talk. I mean, guys on the Astros bench are going to be like, man, we were stealing signs last year. The fact that the Astros didn't think that this was a material breach of conduct, that Hinch and his general manager, Jeff Luhnow, didn't go, hey, guys, we can't be doing this stuff, it really surprises me. It really does. Nick Aliotti of the Pac-12 Networks is coming up at about 1:18, Adriana, 1:18 on Aliotti. Also, before that, we're going to play Punch It Audio at the top of the hour, a little shift in our schedule. We're going to hear from Marshawn Lynch. Got to take care of your chicken, okay? Marshawn Lynch coming up. I think he's got life advice for
us. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.